I think that's for King's side.
I think there's been so much confusion about whether we were coming and so on that
There's still confusion.
Pardon me?
There's still confusion out there, whether you're here or not.
Well, yeah, I've noticed that.
I just called the radio station and they're going to continue to announce that you did make it in, so hopefully.
Yeah. Well, that's actually those streets are so messy that. Well, good afternoon, folks. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. And I've been traveling throughout the state for a year now to find out what people have to say about the land claim settlement, about ANCSA. How it's worked out, the good side and the bad side. And to do that job, I've traveled to 59 villages and towns in Alaska, and this is the 60th here in Bethel, and this is the last stop. This completes our village hearings, and I might say that we've never been late for a hearing. We've never had to cancel a hearing until today, until Bethel. We were supposed to be here yesterday, and we didn't make it because of the bad weather. And I'm sorry about that, because it's obviously created confusion about whether we were coming or not. But we're here, and so I'm glad that we will be able this afternoon and this evening to give folks in Bethel a chance to speak on these questions. This is our 60th hearing, and around the state, more than 1,400 Alaskan Natives and other Alaskans have testified, and we've learned a lot about the land claim settlement and about the way in which it has worked out here in Alaska. We wanted to find out what the impact of the land claim settlement had been in the villages, and that's why we've been traveling in the villages now for a year. Well, I'd like you to tell me what you think about the corporations, the regional corporations, the village corporations, how they've worked out, what expectations you had when the land claim settlement came in 1971. What did you think it was going to do for you and your village and your town? And how has it worked out? I'd like you to tell me about your feelings on the 1991 issues. What about the fact that children born after 1971 were left out of the settlement? Do you think they should be allowed to participate in some way? What about the question whether shares should be restricted when 1991 arrives? That is, as ANCSA now stands, people who own shares in BNC or in Chilista will have the right in 1991 to sell their shares. And if you sell your shares, you will get some money for them, depending on what they're worth, could be a lot of money or not very much money. You could buy a snow machine or buy a house, maybe, if they're worth a lot of money. That's one of the choices you now have. But the way Congress set the corporations up, if you sell your shares, if a majority of the people who own shares in BNC or in Chilista were to sell their shares to an outsider, somebody from Anchorage or Seattle or New York, then that outsider would wind up, if he bought up a majority of the shares, he would wind up owning and controlling BNC or Chilista or whatever corporation it might be that was his target. And of course, since native land that was to be conveyed to the native people under the Claims Act, since the land is a corporate asset, if a majority sell their shares, they lose not only control of the corporation, but they lose their land as well. So that's a pretty important issue and one you should be thinking about. Then there's the question of taxation. More than 90% of the revenue in this state comes from Prudhoe Bay, and we are told that that oil production in Prudhoe Bay is starting to decline. In the 1990s, state revenues are declining because the oil revenues that have sustained the state are not there anymore, then the state might start looking around and might decide to impose a tax on native corporation land in rural Alaska. And native people have 44 million acres of land in Alaska. If the state ran out of money and decided to impose even a 25-cent an acre tax on an annual basis, that would be about $11 million native corporations would have to raise every year. And a lot of the small corporations, maybe even some of the big ones, wouldn't be able to raise that kind of money, and they'd lose their land to the state. Well, I don't know whether anything like that is likely to happen or not, but it's something you should think about, because 20 years after the native corporations get their land, that land can be taxed, even if it's used for subsistence and nothing else. There have been proposals to establish a land bank to enable native corporations to put their land in the land bank and avoid taxation. If you have any ideas about the land bank, I'd like to hear about those too. Then there's a question of subsistence that comes up at every meeting. People are concerned that if they lose their land, then they won't have any place to hunt. They won't have access to their fishing camps, and they feel pretty strongly about that. What do you think should be done about all this? There are two lines of thought that people have been bringing up at the meetings that we've been holding. Some say, well, look, let's get Congress to pass a law that ensures that native shareholders can't sell their shares after 1991. Then those corporations will always be native corporations. If somebody really desperately wants to sell his shares, then let him sell them back to the corporation, but not to anybody outside. Well, that's one idea. And that's one way of keeping the corporations in native ownership and the land in native ownership. The other idea, and it's one that people in Southwest Alaska, I suppose, bring up oftener than people anywhere else, is the idea of transferring the land from the corporations to IRA governments or traditional governments, tribal governments, and with the idea that the land can be kept safely if it's under the ownership of an IRA government or a traditional government. There are problems about that too. There are problems about all of these ideas, but those are some of the ideas that people have been kicking around at these meetings. Now, I'm not here. I wasn't sent here by the federal government, and I'm not here because the state sent me here. I'm here because the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, asked me to do this job. The World Council of Indigenous People, which is an international organization of Indian people, is co-sponsoring this work. And when I finished my travels, and I'll just about have finished them after today, I'm going to sit down and write a report about ANCSA, about the land claims, about all of these issues that people have raised at these meetings. And my report will be based on what Alaska Natives have told me at these meetings. I'm going to write a report that will reflect the concerns that you have expressed at these meetings that I've had all over the state during the past year. My report will go to the Inuit Circumpolar Conference and the World Council of Indigenous People, and they will submit it to the United Nations. But it has been agreed that my report will be made public, and in fact, I will be making my report public in September 1985, and I will be sending it to every village corporation and every IRA council and every traditional council and to every regional corporation and every non-profit corporation. And I'll be sending it as well to everybody who testifies at these hearings, because I hope to make recommendations in my report that will be useful to Alaska Natives in charting their course for the future, and I'll be making recommendations for Native people in other countries so that they can learn from what has happened here, the good things about ANCSA and the bad things, the things that Alaska Natives have achieved and the mistakes that Alaska Natives may have made. That report will be available in September, and I'll be sending it to those of you who will be testifying. And I do want it to be something that will make a constructive contribution to resolving these issues, because they are difficult issues. They're not going to be easy to resolve. But I want to play my part in helping to resolve them. Well, I think that's enough talk on my part. When you testify, would you come up and speak at this microphone and at this chair? That's so that everything you say can be taken down on tape by Jim Sykes here, who is our sound man, and then typed up so that there will be a permanent record of everything that people have said at these hearings. Because my report will be based on what you've told me. I want there to be a permanent record of what Alaska Natives have told me. More than 1,400 of you have testified already, so that there will not be any argument about what you said. It'll all be there in writing, and I can base my report on it. So, we're open for business, and if anybody would like to begin, just step right up here and let me have your views.
I'm Matthew Beans, now living in Bethel for the past 27 years. Born on the Yukon River. My major concern right now is the term wetlands or non-navigable waters. Since the wetlands or the non-navigable waters is our lifestyle, just as your ranches or your wheat fields are as important to the Western society, so is these wetlands, because we live by them through the muskrats that are in the waters, the mink, the otter, and the beaver. And we have the blackfish, pike, white, trout, and the salmon in seasons. Since our younger generations are in a transitional period and not totally adapted to the Western society, and since the human body is not used to the table shelf foods, we are susceptible to the different viruses that are in our atmosphere. Therefore, the native people are the first ones to get a hold of the viruses, since they're not eating the natural food that the body is used to, and therefore have no immunity or little immunity to fight off the viruses. For that reason, in future years, I hate to see any kind of restrictions for the use of the wetlands, or partial restrictions for the uses of wetlands, due to the fact our body needs that, and at the same time our younger generations are not totally adapted to the Western society. Number two, 1981, when I was down southeast in Alaska, Calista Corporation had a meeting down at Imangak with the Federal Fish and Wildlife. At that time, Fish and Wildlife requested to turn this Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta into a national wildlife refuge from Kalskag to old village of Napamute on down to the coast. That concern bothers me very much, simply because that's the major part of the Calista Corporation land. And I do not know to this date what kind of an agreement federal government and the Calista Corporation made at that time, when whether they swapped lands or whether federal just took it as a national wildlife refuge. Them are the two major concerns that I have. And number three, these wetlands after 1991, whichever the way they go, is going to close our way of travel, especially in the winter time, and these sloughs called non-navigable waters, where we have to go to our berry picking areas. Whether we'll have freedom use of these waters or the overland travel by snow machines or dog teams, which are almost thing of the past, without any restrictions, because we have to go to these trails that have been in the land for many centuries to reach to our areas where we trap mink, muskrat, otter, beaver, and also the blackfish and the whitefish that we fish through the under the ice. These are my major concerns. Thank you.
Mr. Beans, I wonder if I could ask you a question. You're a long-time resident here, and I guess you're an elder now. I don't know. But if after 1991 these shares go on the market, if shares can be bought and sold in the native corporations, what do you think will happen to the shares? Do you think the people will sell, keep the shares, or what?
Well, since the state of Alaska and federal government is trying to take the term Native Alaskans simply because we're registered United States citizens. I'm afraid we will have no freedom use of the land. Because we may be here on the land that was passed down from generations for the, with the freedom of use, and then all of a sudden when we do have to get rid of our land simply because we cannot pay property taxes, we'll be persons without a country, seemingly like without a country. Though we are indigenous people here, it'll be like us people without any land, simply because we sold our property due to the fact that we were unable to, and employment being scarce in the area, and majority of our young people are still uneducated. They haven't got any college graduate degrees. And as time goes on, this time and age, you have to have a college degree in order to acquire some kind of skilled labor. Without skilled labor, you cannot go back to your ways and hunt fur-bearing animals, nor can you use the land as freely as I did. So, cash economy is going to be a real essential after 1991.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Angalgak Hachogonak Yupik, full Alaska Native. And of course, in sheep's clothing, my name is Pascal Afghan. And I am quite concerned about what is happening with our people, the land, their way of life. And I may not have any testimony per se that I can offer that may be new or anything really relevant that would help your survey. And having experienced such things before, I kind of wonder if, as you said indeed, that you will certainly publish all this, I'm sure, but will the powers that be will take the information and incorporate it into actual, you know, reality that the natives can live with?
Well, nobody
that is one
can
of the questions
foretell,
I have.
What the powers that be will do, but at least this will be a unique record of what Alaska Natives all over the state in every region have said about the land claim settlement and what they want to do about it and where they want to go now. And it might be difficult to ignore that, but I certainly can't make any promises. Nobody could. Some of these things depend on the federal government, some depend on Congress, and I don't speak for them. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody, no one that I personally know does, but tell me what's on your mind, if you would, sir.
Yes, okay. Well, since the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act had been incorporated also, at that time, I was one of the people up at Fairbanks going to school, I believe, or in the Navy. And during that time, I selected to go back to my old village, at Kulrak, Aguluak, that's down lower Yukon, one of the tributaries, and turned out that I couldn't make any land claims because there weren't enough people going there. So I got stuck in at large.
Or whatever it is.
Uh-huh. So I ended up at large, and up to this time, I still don't know whether I have any place to really call my place. I do have a little share in St. Mary's Native Corporation, which I inherited from my mother. But otherwise, I feel that I am at a loss wherever I am, whatever I do. Cannot really call myself a member of any corporation, really. And therefore, not very much voice. I may have the intelligence or the abilities, but I will be of no use to any of the corporations if I don't belong to any one of them. As Lars Zelista finds, there are many young, bright people coming up, and they certainly can voice the opinions of the people and everything. But myself, without any land, without any real benefits from within a village corporation, feel at a very great loss. And since all these game rules, seasons for hunting, fishing, I've missed out on those because of my disabilities and whatever, that I could not get any fishing permit because my arm gets tangled in nets, and fishing, going out trapping in the winter, the device gets too cold and it doesn't warm up, never can warm up.
You're talking about your artificial hand.
Right.
Just for the record.
The device,
yeah,
on the arm is plastic, and once it gets cold, there's not enough body heat to keep it warm. So it stays cold and everything. So yeah. Right now, I have been without work since 1984, which was last year, springtime, and drawing unemployment. When I could go out and do some hunting, fishing, now that requires permits. So where are we?
Yeah.
And no place, and this isn't my land. This is a corporation here in Bethel.
Despite your disability, could you go hunting in summer?
I could do all these things that I've done when I was younger, because I do know how. But due to what's happening now, I cannot very easily obtain these licenses and permits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
To do all these things. And I'm sure you've come across some people among the 14,000 you've interviewed so far.
Yeah. It's 1,400.
Okay. Excuse me. Anyway, I'm sure that they are about in the same position as I am, and that not only myself but also the elders here who have never been able to speak any English, I think they are the people, if and when translated, what's on their minds, they should be the ones that you should listen to and try to take action. Because as I read in one of the letters in Tundra Drums from one of the natives, it states that the United States has lost too much of its credibility due to the past dealings with minorities and peoples, nations, such as the Indians down in the States. And that letter urged, I believe it was the president, to try to keep its credibility. The way the United States wants power, the power is among our people.
You said that you were left out when enrollment took place back in the early 70s, but they did open up enrollment, I think, in 1976. There was a second chance to get enrolled. Do you remember that at all?
No, I was aware of 76 enrollment in any lands.
What about this question of selling your shares? Do you think you should have the right to sell your shares if you want to, or do you think that there's a danger that if too many sell their shares, they could lose control of the corporation?
Yes, absolutely.
And the
land? I feel about the same as all the rest of the people, that we'd like to keep our shares among our people. if and when we do have to sell them, I must prefer to sell to another native rather than get it out of our control. And I think that's the best way to build your power among our people, by developing the people. Certainly we appreciate all the help we've been getting from the United States. And I'm sure we didn't ask for it, but they gave the Russians some money to take over. I don't know what for, but they did, and I'm glad they did. So thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Thank you.
Children. One child's a shareholder, one child's not a shareholder. And I've been in this area since 1969. And my perception of the act is that it's resulted or caused a number of things that it was probably never intended to cause. I've seen the creation of village corporations that divide villages, where a village was united prior to the act. The village comes divided at the inception of the act. How that happens is that the village corporation goes into business, and suddenly the village corporation is competing with existing businesses that already existed through the private sector, or they're competing with their, say, a village cooperative. And so this has caused, I think, division. From the regional corporation, because it had to be a profit corporation, it is forced to locate outside of its own region in Anchorage. The regional corporation feels that Anchorage is the business community. It does not look upon Bethel as the business community. Therefore, it locates outside of our region. And what was kind of touted as an advantage to the regional corporation, touted as the investments, for example, buying the hotel, erecting the hotel, was sort of offered that this hotel,
the Sheraton.
It was said, well, this hotel is going to offer our shareholders employment. But we all know the way equal opportunity is set up, that you really can't have a racially employed labor force. It has to be equal opportunity for people that are applying for jobs. So you don't really see very much employment of shareholders in the hotel. In fact, if you walk down the hallways, most of the people that service the rooms, the maids and things, are talking Korean or talking a different language than Yupik. So the regional corporation has become invisible.
Has become what?
Invisible. I think it's an invisible corporation. And I think that's going to result, when you get to your question of are people going to sell shares or not, for the regional corporation, I'd say yes, because the regional corporation doesn't mean anything to people. It's in Anchorage. It's lost millions of dollars. It has no direct impact on people's lives except some very small dividend checks that have come out. It's going to be like fishing permits. Fishing permits initially were controlled by native people, but fishing permits get sold. As people are under the pressure of a cash economy, they've sold their fishing permits, and I think it's going to happen with shares of regional stock. Especially if the regional corporation is successful, there are going to be offers for those stock, and I think people will sell. The the question of the newborns, I feel that in my household, I have a 14-year-old boy who's a shareholder and a 10-year-old boy who's not a shareholder. There's some perception between them that there's a difference now between them. Even though they're both half Caucasian and half Eskimo, there's a feeling of some difference between them. And I resent that. And it seems that another problem with the newborns is almost connected to 1991. It's as if 1991 means the end of the culture in some way. People look at that as like a time bomb in which something's going to happen to the culture when 1991 comes. And especially in this area is traditionally has been the champion of the land. I think it's the result of the leadership in this area that the act got passed with such a large feeling for the land incorporated in the act. And this area had to battle against the urban native population that was mainly interested in a money settlement. And the leadership in this area really battled to get the land incorporated into the act. And now they're faced with having that battle really lost when 1991 comes. Anyway, my conclusion or summary is that the act has caused more in dividing people, has caused more stress in the culture, is doing more towards taking people from their land than it is in uniting people, giving them ownership, and keeping their culture intact.
Just before you go, Mr. Morgan, that's a pretty good critique of the act. Any ideas for the future? I mean, what ought to be done? Have you thought about that?
I would be in favor of incorporating the plan that I've heard, in which as somebody dies, their shares revert back to a pool, and as somebody is born who's native person, they become a shareholder. I'd be in favor of a land bank, some way of protecting the land. I still see a need for, if we're going to keep the corporate form, there's just a crying need for training. The village corporations are set up in a way that require them to do an audit every year. To do an audit is very expensive for a village corporation. Probably half of them don't get done. Shareholders then begin to distrust what's going on in the village because they don't know what's happening with the money. So there needs to be more emphasis, I think, on training and education if the corporate model is going to stay around, how to run that corporate model.
Okay, thanks very much. Yes, sir. Yeah, please. Please mention it.
In this term of wetlands, we cannot define the use of wetlands in each area because each area varies greatly. So it's very hard to define how the uses of wetlands can be interpreted. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Cecilia Martz. I'm a member of a corporation, member of the Chiva Corporation, and a member of the Jalista Corporation. I was just thinking when I was sitting over there, when all this started back in 1970, whenever it started, 1966, that those people that were working on this didn't know what a mess we'd be in today. My first area of concern starts way back when I first started hearing about the native land claims. I think it was late 1960s and early 1970s. The very first time I heard about the Native Claim Settlement Act was when people called enumerators, first started going to the villages and had village hearings in the different areas, different villages. And they talked about things that we did not understand that were far removed from the village. At that time, when the native land claims first started, most of us were more connected to the land than we are today. And at that time, the disparity between the people that were working on the Native Land Claim Settlement Act and the people that would be affected by the Claim Settlement Act, there was a big, huge difference between them. As if the people that were dealing in theory of the Native Land Claim Settlement Act were far removed from the actual effect that the people who were not involved in the theory process that would be affected by the theorizing that the people were doing at that time. So my first area of concern is that there's still a disparity between the people that actually execute the native land claims and the people that are affected by the native land claims in terms of knowledge of the land claims from both sides. You know, the people that are outside the villages not understanding what's going on in the villages, and the people that are in the villages not understanding what's going on in Congress or wherever. And then one of my concerns, and I've heard a lot of people verbalize this concern, is the year 1991. I think that year is in the minds of a lot of people. And the one that we fear the most for the year 1991 is earlier you mentioned the declining monies in Alaska, and that, you know, as the state needs more money, that we'd be taxed in the long run. So the biggest fear that we have on the year 1991 is the fear of taxes on land. In my mind, when I look at the groups of people that are here in the Jalisco region, are there subsistence-based natives that are like 99% subsistence. Maybe salt and pepper from the store for their seasoning, and those that are about half and half. I put myself in that category. Half subsistence and half Western stuff, and those that lean more toward Western things, pop and coke and stuff like that. So there's three categories of people that are here. And
in Southwest?
Yes. Okay,
Jalisco
region, because I've seen all three areas. There's some natives that are totally dependent on subsistence type activities, subsistence foods, subsistence clothing, subsistence cycle in their lives. And those of us that have maybe a job and can't live without seal oil, but can't do without Western oil either. And then those that...
Did you say Western oil or Wesson?
Western oil.
Okay.
Is there such a thing as Western oil? Is it Western oil? That's TV.
Sorry.
Okay, and then the ones that lean more to it, that would rather have can of stew meat than maklak for their... lunch. Okay, seems like if we lump all of these three together, somehow it wouldn't be equal. For some reason, I have this feeling that if all of these things, all of the parts of the Native Land Claim Settlement lumped everybody together into one category, that there'd be inequality somehow. So, you know, if a person leans more towards those that are more Western than subsistence, the subsistence people would be hurt, you know. And my heart leans more towards subsistence-based natives than, you know, than the others. Okay, that's one fear. How many fears is that? Three fears, three concerns. Okay, one question that I have, and I don't know if you can answer it, is, and it's been going through my mind for the year 1991, if land is the same as your shares, if the shares are connected with the land, are they?
Well, indirectly they are. This is always something that's hard to get across, but the corporation owns the land,
mm-hmm.
and you have
shares
in the corporation. And
the shares in the corporation are the.
That's the title deeds to ownership of the corporation, so to speak. And if somebody goes into one of these villages and starts buying shares, when they get 50% plus one of the shares, then they will own the corporation and
therefore
own
the land.
Yeah.
Seems to me I don't know if it's a solution or if it would make things worse would be separating the land from the shares, and I don't know how that could be. Maybe the monetary aspect, the business aspect of the corporations be the shares where the land would be separated. Because when I look at Jalisco Corporation, it's like Sheraton Hotel or Settlement Bay, whatever that is, Settlers Bay. That's what I picture in my mind as Jalisco Corporation. Aside from us and away from us and not concerned with us